Radio Prague News.
Former rector of Brno's Masaryk University, Petr Fiala, has been appointed the new education minister. The Czech Republic tops Bloomberg's Global Vice Index, which ranks countries according to alcohol and cigarette consumption, drug use and gambling losses. And the Prague court has returned an alleged terrorism support case to the prosecution for further investigation. Former rector of Brno's Masaryk University, Petr Fiala, was on Wednesday appointed the new education minister. Mr. Fiala, who has also served as chief science and research advisor to Prime Minister Petr Nečas, assumed the post a month after his predecessor stepped down over problems with securing EU funds. The nomination of the former rector and political scientist, who is unaffiliated with any political party, was agreed upon by both parties in the ruling coalition. For the second time since their introduction last year, the new state school leaving exams began on Wednesday at Czech secondary schools with tests in the Czech language. Some 103,000 students are taking the exams this year. They are available in two versions, however only 4% of students chose the more difficult alternative. Besides Czech, the exams are held in either mathematics or foreign language, with around 44% of students choosing math. The oral part of the exams will be held later in May. The project of standardized school leaving exams was criticized for excessive bureaucracy and high costs. The Czech Republic came first in the Global Vice Index compiled by the news agency Bloomberg, which ranks 57 countries of the world according to alcohol and cigarette consumption, drug use and gambling losses. Based on data from the World Health Organization, the Czech Republic tops the list of alcohol consumption per capita, while it ranks second in drug use, fifth in the consumption of cigarettes and 12th in gambling losses. The survey focused on those aged between 15 and 64. A Prague court has returned a case of alleged support of terrorism to the prosecution for further investigation over procedural errors, a spokeswoman for the court said on Wednesday. Four foreigners, three men from Dagestan and one from Moldova, were arrested last year in the Czech Republic on charges of support of terrorism. They allegedly counterfeited identification documents for members of Jamaat Shariat, an Islamist militant group in Dagestan. If found guilty, the men could face up to 10 years in prison. Car production in the Czech Republic increased by almost 14% in the first quarter of this year and reached a record number of nearly 350,000 cars, according to figures by the Automotive Industry Association released on Wednesday. Production rose both in Škoda Auto and the Czech Hyundai plant in Nošovice in Northern Moravia, whereas the number of cars produced by the TPCA Czech plant in Kolín registered a slight decrease. A court in Ostrava, in the northeast of the country, on Wednesday sentenced a 55-year-old man to 18 months in prison for failing to pay over 200,000 crowns in fees for his hospital stays. According to the prosecution, the man spent most of the time between late 2007 and last November in hospitals. He owes money to some 70 Czech hospitals. He also often ordered above-standard services, although he was not able to pay for them. The man is believed to suffer from Münchhausen syndrome, a disorder characterized by feigning diseases to attract attention and sympathy. Both the defendant and the prosecutor said they would consider appealing the verdict. And finally,
hello and welcome. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, and my name is Sarah Borůvka. Coming up in today's program, Petr Fiala has been named the new education minister. A public vote has decided against a CT scan of some very mysterious crates at the National Museum. And then later in Spotlight, we take you to Gurjejov, one of the oldest wine growing communities in the country. All that coming up, so do stay with us. The long vacant post of Minister of Education, Youth and Sports has been taken up by Petr Fiala, political scientist and former chancellor of Masaryk University in Brno. Currently, the science advisor to the prime minister and a political independent, Dr. Fiala has been roundly praised as an excellent choice to lead a ministry facing an exceptional number of hurdles. Christian Falvey reports.
President Václav Klaus officially named 47-year-old Dr. Petr Fiala Minister of Education on Wednesday and said he believed that the important post was being given into the right hands. That was only the latest congratulatory remark for an appointment that has been highly praised by politicians on both sides of the political spectrum and, crucially, by academics. As the head of the second largest university in the Czech Republic, Dr. Fiala was credited with weaning the institution off its dependence on attendance-based grants and having it make money on its own by joining research and applied science. The Daily Hospodářské noviny writes that the university's budget under Dr. Fiala more than doubled to 6 billion crowns and the value of its property increased by 7 billion. The number of students also increased during his tenure from 30 to 45,000. For comparison, Charles University has 50,000 students and a budget of 7 billion. Václav Havlíček is the chancellor of the Czech Technical University in Prague.
I think that the selection of Professor Fiala is a good one. I have worked with him for more than 6 years in the Czech Rectors Conference, and he is a prudent person with insight and an understanding of the situation in education at all levels.
The Minister of Education is, of course, responsible for all of the levels of education in the country. Head of the Association of Czech High Schools, Jiří Kuhn, says he too is pleased with the choice of Dr. Fiala.
There is no doubt that he is very knowledgeable where higher education is concerned. He will have to familiarize himself with the issues of regional education right from the beginning, however, its financing, the completion of curricular reforms and similar things. Those are matters that are so pressing that Petr Fiala will have to deal with them very quickly.
Even the shadow education minister Marcel Chládek said Fiala was one of the top experts in the country, but noted he was sitting in an electric chair with seemingly no end to the pressing matters that the new head of Czech education will have to deal with very quickly if he is to avoid the mass protests, lawsuits and persistent bad press faced by his predecessor Josef Dobeš. Among them is the worrisome situation around EU funding under threat due to alleged mismanagement. Equally urgent is the issue of budget cuts, which former Minister Dobeš cited as the reason for his resignation, saying he refused to accept the fact that the cuts would mean decreases in teachers' salaries. Another hot issue is that of student tuition, the complicated handling of which has brought students and teachers out into the streets in recent times. Fiala has said so far only that some form of student financial participation would be essential.
I would be the last person to think that I can resolve all of these problems, but I do promise you that I will carry out the position that has been entrusted me with all my strength. I will be dealing with all of these issues very soon. However, my first goal is, of course, to familiarize myself with the situation at the ministry in detail.
Samozřejmě je detailně se seznámit s rezortem.
Dr. Fiala added that the education reforms commenced by his predecessor Josef Dobeš were for the most part headed in the right direction. Critics would hold otherwise. Mr. Dobeš of the Public Affairs Party was one of the most beleaguered members of a troubled cabinet. With that party out of government, the new ruling coalition will now be hoping for a very fresh start.
That report was brought to you by Christian Falvey. Thanks for that, Christian. Two massive wooden boxes, each weighing over 300 kilograms, that was what the botanist and pharmacologist Bohuslav Jiroš left the National Museum in his will some 100 years ago. The humongous mystery crates came with one instruction. They should not be opened until 200 years after Yurish's death, the year 2101. Now, the National Museum has published the surprising result of its vote on whether its researchers should be allowed to at least take a peek inside with computed tomography. In 1901, Bohuslav Yurish left the National Museum two huge wooden crates with the instruction to not open them until 200 years after his death. He could not have anticipated that before then technology should advance to the point that a look inside the boxes would not even require opening them. The mysterious boxes are tempting the curiosity of researchers and the public alike, but is taking a look inside them with computed tomography a breach of what Bohuslav Yurish asked for in his will? The National Museum put this ethical dilemma to the vote. The surprising result of the one-month poll was published on Tuesday. Martin Segera is the head of the National Museum's library.
53% hlasujících se vyjádřilo pro neotevření.
53% were against opening or scanning the boxes, and 47% were in favor of scanning them. The public expressed the opinion that the wish in Yurish's will should be respected, even if at the time of his death he could not have anticipated that something like computed tomography would exist. And as an institution, we were glad that the public thought that was unethical.
Some 3,000 people participated and shared often very emotional opinions on the museum's webpage. Now, museum researchers have formed a special team to find out more about the content of the mysterious boxes through other methods. Due to their weight, it is fairly certain that they contain heavy objects, says Mr. Sekera, most likely from copper. Given that Bohuslav Yurish was a scientist, it is safe to say that any degradable objects in the crates would have been conserved in some way. And the Special Mystery Box research team has come up with yet another way of solving the curious case of the heavy crates.
We thought that another good way of researching the contents would be through our archive. We will go through our archive, even elements that are not directly connected to Bohuslav Yurish, so that we can rule out that it may hold some information on the content. An archive is a very complex organism, and sometimes things can be filed incorrectly. Our team will be searching archive materials, and maybe we will randomly discover something that sheds light on the content of these mysterious boxes.
The results of the search through the archives will be announced next week on May 10th. And unless a new generation of museum researchers decides to disrespect the poll, the public won't be able to take an actual look inside the boxes until 89 years from now. And of course, Radio Prague will be keeping up with the story for you. But now it is time for our weekly feature spotlight. And in this edition, we actually go south to Moravia Skurjov, one of the oldest wine-growing communities in the country. Christian Falvey has this report.
South Moravia is well known for its wine, which has been produced there at least since thirsty Roman soldiers far from home began doing so in the 2nd century. Move forward 1,000 years or so to the 13th century, and wine trading had become one of the most profitable businesses in the region. Those are the days that our destination for today stretches back to. The village of Kurjejov is just a tiny pinprick on the map, about halfway between Brno and Břeclav, and there are just enough inhabitants for each of them to have their own day of the year. But while easy to overlook, Kurjejov is notable for many ancient features, all born of the fact that this is one of the oldest wine-growing communities in the region. In fact, the first time anyone mentioned Kurjejov in writing, it was about wine, specifically the sale of vineyards, in 1286. Such was the local wine then valued that the four sons of the local nobleman agreed around 80 years later that, quote, all the wine from the hills of Kurdyev be divided into four parts so that none might be diluted. To describe the village of those days is Antonia Nemečková, a businesswoman and promoter of Moravian wine.
Kurdyjov is one of the oldest vineyard communities in the country, and whichever direction you look in, the hills there used to be covered in vineyards. The village was German-speaking and had more than 1,000 inhabitants. It was an affluent community, and between all the fields there were wine cellars. The fortified church is also a testament to the wealth of the village. The fortifications were erected to protect against the raids of those who wanted to plunder the village.
There were lots of enemies, to be sure, from Turks and Hungarian rebels to rapacious Swedes. Most of them took the added effort of burning the village down, while Transylvanian Prince Gabriel Bethlen actually took 400 of the villagers as slaves. The people of Kurdyjov were ready for the Tartars, at least. During their onslaught, the villagers did a great deal of damage to them, thanks to the useful presence of a fortified church, today one of the oldest monuments in South Moravia. The church was here as early as 1350, with the fortifications added later. Miroslav Zemlička, a guide in the church, describes some of its interesting features.
The bells come from 1456, 1469, and 1606. During the First Republic, their value was estimated at 500,000 crowns, but today they are priceless. The tower adjacent to the church used to be 53 meters. Today, its height is 45 meters because previous repairs and other work had to decrease it to keep it from falling over.
Also part of the fortification is the Chapel of All Saints.
The encroachment of foreign troops or other enemies in the village could be prevented not only from the city walls, but also through the crenels or battlements with arrow slits on the chapel. Previously, the chapel and the church were connected by a bridge. It's not here today because it collapsed sometime during the 18th century, so the church and the tower can only be reached from the outside.
While lovely today still, history has taken away some of the once grand features of the tower. Each floor originally had four smaller turrets, the tops of which had green weathercocks and stars. Harder for time to erase is the set of underground tunnels beneath the tower, accessible from the nearby wine bar, where Miroslav Zemlička offers a local speciality, spirit of almond. The neighboring town of Hustopeče hosts the only almond orchard in the country. It's a good courage booster for what lies ahead.
Now we'll be taking you into the local underground corridors. Among other things, they served as a hiding place when the village was attacked. There are 340 meters of tunnels here, and one of them went all the way to the church in Hustopeče. If you go by the road, that's 3 kilometers away, but in the 15th century, these tunnels were 12 kilometers long. With land changing hands over so many years, though, and various ways of settlement, the better part of the corridors did not survive. There's this section and then another in Hustopeče in the cellar of a pub.
The corridors get narrower and lower and wind around more and more the further one goes. It used to be that neither the church nor the corridors were secured, and Mr. Zemlička would visit them as a boy, so he has their every nook and cranny well mapped out. Today the area is accessible only on reservation.
When you go into the corridors, the first tunnel on the right is a dead end. At the end is a flight of stairs and beyond them, a metal door. That was the original entrance to the cellars. And if you keep going straight, then you'll come to the church, which you will recognize because there are stairs going up that are covered by concrete slabs. That corridor goes up to the altar. We're about 20 meters under the surface now, and it's quite damp. I'll light your candles now, and you can go inside.
Though Kurdyjov was originally a Czech village, which we know, among other things, because almost all of the recorded correspondence was written in Czech, a strong German influence beginning in the Renaissance overcame the settlement in the centuries to come. By 1921, there were 881 Germans, 19 Czechs and 16 foreigners living in 212 homes there. After the Second World War, that situation radically changed. Antonia Němečková again.
After the expulsion of the Germans, the population here went overnight from 1,000 to 2 people, so the village was doomed until they began resettling the borders. A lot of the people who received houses here didn't know how to deal with owning property. They didn't know how to take care of a house, so when the roof caved in on them, they just moved to the next empty house. Gradually, almost all the property in the village was destroyed in this way. After the revolution, in 1993, I met a married couple from Austria who were taking a picture of one of the houses. So I invited them to come and have a look at what was new in Kurdejov. They had tears in their eyes and said they had been born in that house, told us not to worry, that they don't want it back. They had just come to look and see how it was doing.
Today, Kurdejov is far from a backwater. It is a much sought-after retreat for private and business gatherings with tennis courts, hotels, and of course vineyards and wine tastings. There are plenty of different wines from different vintners on hand for you to try out, thanks in part to Ms. Němečková's business efforts.
We are promoters of Moravian wine, and the way we decided to do that is by building the biggest wine bars. We selected 100 winemakers and took 6 wines from each. Then we selected from that, and now we support what we believe are 30 truly excellent winemakers.
Kurdejov and its surroundings offer a beautiful environment for all kinds of interests, be they historical, sporting, or wine-related, and a visit to the nearby almond orchard in Hustopeche, a botanical rarity, is not to be forgotten. Almonds need a lot more warmth than the Czech Republic would normally offer, and out of what was once tens of thousands of trees, only about 800 remain. But the town there is determined to hold on to the orchard in spite of the difficulties.
That was Christian Falvey there with a report on one of the country's oldest wine-growing communities. Thanks for that, Christian. And this report was first broadcast in November 2011. I'm afraid this brings us to the end of our regular programming, but of course we are rounding it off, as always, with ABC, our Czech language learning series brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
Ahoy, and welcome to ABC of Czech, Radio Prague's special language program. I am Heather Baun, and...
Vita Asiedu
joins me in the studio. In today's program, we're looking at one of the Czech Republic's great specialties, spas.
Lázně.
People come from all over the world to enjoy the spa services.
Lázeňství.
Such as massages, but mostly to drink the healing water.
Voda.
Which comes from the spa's spring.
Pramen.
There are different kinds of springs.
Minerální pramen,
as you might guess, is a mineral spring, and
termální pramen
are thermal springs. For the most part, the spas in the Czech Republic are situated right in the heart of a city. Perhaps you have heard of
Karlovy Vary,
one of the Czech Republic's best-known spa towns.
Lázeňské město,
located in western Bohemia.
Západní Čechy.
It was founded during the 13th century by King Charles IV.
Král Karel IV.
And is visited by those wishing to treat digestive and metabolic diseases. There are 12 spas.
12 lázní
in
Karlovy Vary,
which emerge from the earth with temperatures ranging from 40 to 70 degrees Celsius.
Karlovy Vary,
which is also known to many people as Carlsbad, is also known for its international film festival, held every year in July. My personal favorite is
Luhačovice,
a small spa town just over the hill from Zlín in Moravia.
Morava.
The spa and town are located deep in a valley on the edge of a preserved area.
Bílé Karpaty.
The White Carpathians, and has been in use for treating disease for over 300 years. Some other famous spas in Bohemia are
Františkovy lázně
and
Mariánské lázně,
sometimes still known as
Marienbad. Mariánské lázně
became popular after a visit by Goethe around the turn of the century. King Edward VII of England was a regular as well, and Mark Twain and Rudyard Kipling were also seen there. On a visit to a spa town today, you may still catch a glimpse of a star.
Hviezda.
But whether or not you do, be sure to try some of the warm spa wafers.
Lázeňské oplatky.
But if you aren't going to a spa town, you can always find a prepackaged
Lázeňské oplatky
in a supermarket, and sometimes there are vendors selling
Lázeňské oplatky
in Prague by the Old Town Square, so keep your eyes open.
Lázeňské oplatky
come in different flavors, such as hazelnut,
oříškové,
chocolate,
čokoládové,
and cocoa,
kakaové.
Traditionally, the wafers were given to spa guests,
lázeňští hosté,
for medicinal purposes, but beware.
Pozor!
After one bite, it's hard to believe these treats are good for you. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed our program, and we haven't left you drooling with the mention of spa wafers.
Lázeňské oplatky.
Until next time.
Naschledanou.
Take care.
Mějte se.
Pavla Horáková with ABC. They're wrapping up Radio Prague's English show for today. But please tell us if you have any thoughts on what you've heard on the show today. You can do so either by email. Our email address is english@radio.cz or on our Facebook page where we have a profile under the username of Radio Prague. Or, of course, you could write us a letter by good old-fashioned snail mail to Vinohradská 12-120 099 Prague 2. And as always, everything you have heard on the show is available at our website archiveradio.cz, both in audio and in text form. Also, you can sign up for a free news email there and use our podcasting. We'll talk to you again soon, but until then, from me, Sarah Borůvka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye.